Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, guys.
We're going to try every single permutation of remote locations. We'll do Will and me in the cave today, Adam remotely, and then Adam, me back here, and Will remotely, just to mix it up.
I'm so sorry you're in the Phantom Zone, Adam. I don't know what you did to deserve this, but like it's a... Yeah.
One of my favorite jokes.
Where are you now?
I am in Memphis. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama.
It looks like you're in a hotel.
I am in a Sheraton in Birmingham. It is our day off.
Oh, nice.
So it was a long week. I noticed that I flubbed some of my lines last night on stage out of sheer tiredness. It's not even that I feel specifically tired, but I noticed that on tour that there are times when I'll just be like, that word that's supposed to be here isn't there, and it's going to take me another second to call it up. But we had a fantastic audience last night. Where were we exactly? We were in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh.
So we drove here to Birmingham. I believe I am across the street from the jail in which Martin Luther King wrote his letter from a Birmingham jail.
Ah. Oh. So is this down? Like, I used to go to football games in Birmingham.
I'm in center of downtown Birmingham. Beyond that, I have not left the room to explore yet today because I've been catching up on my sleep and napping and eating chicken soup.
Oh, good.
Yes, recuperate. I mean, you went to Austin last week. I know I missed the podcast last week, but how was Austin?
Austin was, it's hipster Disneyland.
Only like with that 1 or 2 weeks a year, though.
It was fantastic. I Will and I talked about it. I had a lovely dinner with some Muppeteer friends. Mm-hmm. I saw a bunch of my Maker friends, Sonia Pryor Jones, Andrew Coy, and I had a really wonderful panel about the future of making. And you know, like you have goals for a panel about what you'd like to cover, and I could not be happier with how our panel went. It is like a document of a snapshot of how we're looking at making and how the different tree of possibilities about how it could move forward. So I'm really happy with that panel. I can't wait till it goes live.
Yeah, and something I know also happened was the culmination of the scavenger hunt.
My God.
What?
Jen, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is something that we've been working on and off for like the weeks leading up to South by Southwest. Jen Schachter, who was here at the cave, we recorded a podcast with her. She was embedded with us for a week at our office to do a prototyping of this puzzle. So basically Adam and Andrew Coy charged her with designing this beautiful art piece, laser cut art piece that she then split into 9 pieces and seeded in 9 different places in Austin. And we launched the scavenger hunt, I think the Friday or Saturday morning before your talk, Adam. And it culminated that Tuesday. And I saw photos and it looked like it was a huge success.
It was a huge success. We got to meet all 9 parties that found the puzzle pieces. Many of them had solved the clues for most of the clues. But it was complete success, starting with Jen and her amazing ability to design, engineer, and construct. She's a triple threat, and the finished piece is magnificent. We'll post that up on Tested along with a video meeting the makers, the finders. I
mean, the whole point of the scavenger hunt was to, one, not only celebrate the culture of making, but to really expand what people understand and think of when they think of maker culture. And it's not just workshops, metal shops, or maker spaces in what you think is a traditional tech shop type space, laser cutters and mills, but all, everything. And anytime you make something that didn't exist before out of your own creativity, that's a part of the maker culture. So she designed these 9 different areas of making, from theater to music to costuming. And it's a wonderful, wonderful art piece. And because of the scavenger hunt, we're going to be releasing the files.
Oh, nice. So people can build their own? Yeah. Oh, that's rad.
Well, so each of the people who found a puzzle piece can make the rest of the puzzle for themselves.
Yes.
And one of the guys who found a puzzle found it at the ATX at this Austin Makerspace, and he got a tour of the Makerspace because they were excited to show him, and he didn't know they had student discounts, so he was, the day we met him, their newest member, and he was going to use their laser cutters to make the rest of his puzzle.
Oh,
boom.
Gosh. Yeah.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah, and because they're just, you know, SVG vector files, you can make it any size. Out there, people out there, we're going to be releasing it in coming weeks as we finish editing the video. But the putting together of a scavenger hunt, that's not easy.
Well, I was going to say, like, how do you, especially when you're doing it someplace like Austin during South By, you want to make the things hard enough to find that somebody's not going to accidentally stumble into them, because you want the person who finds the piece to know what to do with it, right?
Yeah.
Or else then the whole thing breaks.
Oh, no. Jen amazes me with her ability to juggle all of that. Yeah. And it's a really an incredible achievement. And the finished piece is a work of art. And I really look forward to seeing, once we release the files, what other people do with it. Because Jen added color by using different types of plywood that she laser cut. But there's no reason someone couldn't cut this out of clear acrylic or plastic or any sort of material and then paint it and add other depths to it. Really, the sky's the limit. So I get very excited about seeing this. And she's also going to design a frame that holds all nine pieces in orientation.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, this type of design, it's made for remixing.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to evolve over time also. But yeah, you're right, Will. Like, that Saturday and Sunday, as we launched it, I was just getting ready to do my travels. I was following online, and we had done a post on Tested, and people were contributing answers to the scavenger hunt. So even if they weren't in Austin, they were helping solve the puzzle.
So you made it, and, like, it was intentionally difficult enough that you needed more than just a handful of brains working on the problems. That's good.
Oh, and that was something that was really lovely to watch, was that thread developing as the Tested community was, and by the way, my big heart to the Tested community, putting out the answers and collaborating on them, understanding that it's a group effort, but also going back to the Pittsburgh Maker video that we released last week, and all the makerspace from Tested Premium members around the country saying, hey, we've got a makerspace. I love the volume. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the reasons that I'm on the board of Nation of Makers, is so that we can have a comprehensive database, and that if you're in any given city, you know where you could go, where, you know, you could get stuff done.
Well, that was
one of like-minded makers.
That was one of the things we talked about really early on when you came on to Tested, basically, is like, a lot of that information is out there. And if you don't know, like, I would never know to go to Urban Ore to find tubing and pipes, except for you said, hey, Urban Ore is a great, what is it you're looking for? Oh, go to Urban Ore, go to these other three places. And like, there's a lot of that information is tied up in oral history, and getting it out in a way that people can find it will make it a lot more accessible for a lot of people.
And when I was in Orlando, there's a wonderful surplus shop in Orlando that I've been to before because it's fairly famous. They've got all sorts of stuff, military switches hacked out of old pieces of equipment and stuff like that. And I also, my friend Andrew Coy set up a meeting with me and some of my Nation of Makers people and some local makerspaces in Orlando. And we sat down for almost 2 hours to really talk about the state of making and what we can do to raise the volume on it within a city and within the country. And like, every single person in the room laughed when I said I had just come from that surplus shop, because it was such a key part of Orlando's maker culture.
That's awesome. So, Norm, you also, can you talk about your trip last
week? Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Yeah. So
I'm so jealous.
Yeah. Last week, while you guys were podcasting, Joey, Simone, Kishore, and I were in Switzerland and France. We visited CERN.
Oh, wow.
And, the Large Hadron Collider. And for Joey and I, it was actually our second visit. So I feel a little guilty about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. So, like, at this point, it's safe to say that the Large Hadron Collider is the most complex machine built by man.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm obviously popularized by what I like to call that book.
Which book?
You know, Angels and Demons.
Oh, right. I didn't read that book.
the Dan Brown movie and the book. But yeah, it's a multi-billion dollar venture that took years, and its culmination, CERN itself as an organization, is over 50 years old, and it started with linear colliders, the smaller circular colliders, and the Large Hadron Collider, which opened in 2007, I believe, is a multi-year, multi-billion dollar effort, which you can't fathom today. An international effort for, to do a to what boils down to science experiments.
Like, well, it's particle physics too, which is, you know,
intangible.
Well, it is. They like a lot of the things that we use every like these every a lot of stuff in our phones happened because of things that we learned doing particle physics 40 years ago. But the results from those experiments take a really long time to become apparent and to develop applications of. So the fact that Europe in large part has spent billions of dollars building this incredible experiment or series of experiments, right, is incredible. So what last time you were there, you went and looked at the
Atlas experiment,
right?
Yes. So our primary contact, the physicist who part of the outreach program invited us there, Stephen Goldfarb, he works for the Atlas experiment. So the way it's organizationally works is there's the LHC, which is the ring,
mm-hmm.
and then along the ring there are four detectors or experiments where the particles collide, and then they built these giant room-sized underground cavern machines that detect them and study them. And we're talking about petabytes of data, you know, per hour that's being sent away to be analyzed, and it's all
petabyte is 1,000 terabytes.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's the cable management was something that we all appreciate. Like as nerds, like we couldn't understand the particle
physics.
You have
to post to that subreddit of Cat5 good wiring and conduit work.
Oh my god.
Oh my. Like we were all freaking out. Like there's no one person that could possibly comprehend the complexity of the machine.
Wow. Yeah.
It's something that builds in layer and layer, but it's all beautifully color coded, and there's power, there's data that all just like it's like a living, breathing machine, an organism almost. And we were there to film for a science show we're working on with Kishore, which the community will see in the coming months. But something I did want to talk about is that we also ran a workshop there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So Kishore, who works for the Bay Area, he runs the Bay Area Science Festival, mm-hmm. and works for UCSF. His field is basically science communication, and so Stephen Goldfarb, the physicist, we set up a workshop where we had 35 people attend, physicists and communicators at CERN, and Kishore gave a presentation to talk about science communication, how physicists can be better communicators, because there are a lot of
people. The A in STEAM.
Exactly. Yeah. And surprisingly, it surprised me to hear from a lot of physicists and people who work there who don't understand why it's important to, they think the work is enough. The work speaks for itself when oftentimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And many of them don't even realize that, I mean, there are parts that do, but that the misunderstanding, there's a whole, like, if you can let it get out of hand. I mean, if you search LHC and CERN in YouTube or even in Google, you know, a significant portion of the results are conspiracy theorists.
Like,
and
the black hole is going to destroy, they're going to destroy the earth there, man.
And even popular media, they're controlling the conversation about this work. And it's important that it's an exchange and it's not just a one-sided conversation.
Well, and it's especially tough for particle physicists because the a lot of what they're talking about is intangible and incredibly difficult to comprehend if you don't have like at least a bachelor's degree in science.
Right.
Yeah. So we ran a workshop where we actually brought some of the physicists there up to the front of the class, and I did mock interviews with them at 1 or 2 minutes apiece, and we recorded the interviews.
Oh, that's awesome.
And gave them the footage so they can look at themselves and watch themselves. Because the best way to do it is really just to practice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at what you and I did the first few months of Tested, I think those videos are still out there. Like, it was bad.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and we were shooting video every single day and just learned by watching and doing it over and over again. It's the same thing for people on the other side of the microphone as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, while you're saying this, hilariously, the shot of the two of you will almost completely obscures your face behind a microphone and a boom.
It's what everybody's looking for, right? It's only fair.
You know, my mom called me up and she's like, can you do a podcast where those big foam things aren't covering your face?
Adam, I think we talked about this on the podcast already, but at the New Year's party, your mom cornered me and was like, okay, I know you have to do the microphones, but you got to get them out. I didn't know what Norm looked like. So, yeah.
So funny.
But that we did so much. It was a packed 2 days. So we got to see the robotics facility where they make the robots. So the tunnel with the tube, we couldn't actually go down there because that's a very restricted area.
The place between, okay.
Yeah.
The people aren't just jogging down there
exactly.
all the time.
Right.
That's the one policed by BPRD, right?
Yeah, exactly. But they have robots. So
what?
So there's a monorail track that goes all the way around the ring, and the monorail track was originally built for construction purposes.
They would have a monorail,
a cart with materials, and people would, you know, the workers would go. But it's all built, they repurposed the monorail track and built a robot, and there will be a series of robots that will go along the ring, and can visually inspect. And
like if there's a fault in sector 7G, exactly. they can send Beepo the robot around there to check it out.
Totally,
that is amazing.
Yeah,
so are we going to see that video before or is that after? Do you know?
But they actually wouldn't let us film in the robots lab, which is why I can talk about it now. I know. Yeah, Simone was very excited to see.
I know.
And meet those robots.
I had to imagine they were like trying to recruit her. Come in, let's get some. Let's get some shitty
robots. She wasn't allowed
going.
To touch some of the robots.
I can see why, yeah.
They'd have to explain to her that no, we're not trying to collide the robots into each other, just particles.
Yeah. So it's funny you talk about, you went to the particle physicist kind of mecca. I did a podcast a couple months ago now, but it's up now, called Titanium Physics, where we talked about neutrino beams. Mm. And three really smart physicists tried to explain neutrino beams to me, which also happens at CERN.
Yep.
And they fire neutrinos. I don't know if you know, but they're little particles that basically interact with nothing.
Yeah.
And they fire them through the Earth from CERN to Italy, where they detect them, and they found all sorts. It was an interesting conversation. It's definitely worth checking out. I'll send you a link if you want to dump in the show notes. It was it's a good way to learn things, is I found, and to get people who are really educated, is to just have somebody in there being really dumb and asking the dumb question over and over and over again until they explain it, until you get somebody who's an expert to explain something at a level that anybody can understand.
Absolutely.
That was my Mythbusters research model.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, just keep asking really smart people really dumb questions, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
They also they took us to their machine shop.
What?
They have a whole facility. It is thousands and thousands of square feet with, I believe, 15 CNCs, up to 7 or 9 axis CNCs.
Wow.
Giant. And the guys there was, I believe... it was the Italian guys were working there at 7 a.m. just milling custom hardware. They had a titanium welding chamber. So it's this giant chamber that they fill with argon so they could weld titanium. And it's a glove box, essentially. And like you have, eight pairs of gloves that you can go in there and weld titanium. They had a titanium 3D printing machine.
Did they make the stuff for the collider on site, or did they like bring in Atlas? Like, were Atlas and those things assembled there, or were they assembled elsewhere and then trucked in?
It's hugely a collaborative.
Okay.
So a lot of it's subcontracted out. But a lot of the machining that has to be custom. So
I'm sure if something breaks, then it's not like you can get onto the Radio Shack and get a new Atlas experiment.
Yeah.
Wow.
But in the course of traveling, I also did a high-speed train.
What?
Oh!
So we had a crazy way to get there because our flights got canceled. So Kishore and I actually flew to Paris. From San Francisco we did WOW Air.
Oh, really?
We met two Tested fans at the Paris train station who one was standing behind us and recognized us by voice.
Of course.
No.
And then, very, very nice guy. And then the other came up to us holding a phone with a screenshot of one of our videos and said, "Is this you?" Which I thought was very, very charming.
Wow.
So awesome.
But high-speed train from Paris to Geneva, it's like... two and a half hours, three hours. I love the train ride.
Train is, I mean, I've said this many, many times. It's completely my favorite mode of conveyance of all modes of conveyance.
Yeah.
One notch down from that though is the one wheel. And I got, the one wheel plus at South by Southwest.
Are you traveling?
I know
with
it's
that
a
now?
Little bit less thrilling than the high speed train, but
it is an electric skateboard, Adam. That's pretty cool. It's not the most complex machine made by man. Back to the Phantom Zone for you, sir.
Back, sorry.
Are you traveling with that? Is that on the tour bus?
I have been riding it every single day. Thing two, by the way. So now there was a wonderful app called One Wheel Buddy, which has now been absorbed into One Wheel. And their app is a wonderful improvement. Now you can sign up for accounts, and they you can actually record routes where you're riding. You can record routes, and you can trade routes with other people. And there are leaderboards for speed. I'm here to tell you that Thing 2 is way high up on the speed leaderboard now.
So, but hold on, doesn't it speed limit? Can you turn that off if you get crazy?
No, the top speed of this is actually almost 20 miles per hour.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
Thing 2 was able to get it to 21.7 something miles per hour. He told me, I came into my dressing room and he goes, dude, check out where I am on the leaderboard. And then I noticed that he's bandaging his hand because he took a spill.
Yeah, I can see that.
But he couldn't even wait.
That's
awesome.
So good.
Wow.
When you travel, like you're in a new town, you have something like the One Wheel. When you look at Google Maps, you look at the pedestrian walking time and divide that by three, like for time estimation, because there is no...
Actually, no, it's fairly close to a bicycle in terms of time. You know, with an average speed of 12 miles per hour, it's not far off of what a bike journey would be. And I have been getting out in most cities. It's been lovely since we left the Northeast, where it's actually warm down here. It was in Florida for the last week. And speaking of Florida, when I was in Melbourne, Florida, my friend Dave Lavery from NASA came and picked up Thing 2 and I. Got a kind of mind-bending tour. Well, first we went to the Kennedy Space Center, which is, I don't know if you've been since the shuttle's there.
No.
It's worth going there just for that. It is one of the most beautiful exhibits, and literally when you see the shuttle, you will burst into tears, as I did, because they have engineered your first view of it in such a beautiful way. It is a completely destination-worthy museum, and I only experienced like one-tenth of it in the few hours that we had.
That was the whole thing. Every museum that got a shuttle had to design it specific for their museum and to make that a unique experience, because these are, there are only so many of those relics.
So it's, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, we saw the Enterprise on the Intrepid on the deck back when it was in the old place, but now it's across the street. And I haven't been back since, so I need to go see that. But I saw where they have the Discovery, I guess, at the Air and Space Museum is just unbelievable. It's in a whole separate hangar all by itself, and you kind of come through this tunnel, and it's just where you walk through, your nose on at ground level, and it's just the biggest thing. It's not unimaginably big in the way that like a Saturn V is, but it's a unique perspective on it you've never seen before, and you know exactly where you stand in relation to the spaceship, right?
Well, it's really neat. And so the Atlantis, which is what they've got at the Kennedy Space Center, they've opted for a completely different viewing experience that is much more human scale and much more you experience looking at it. I'm getting chills as I'm telling you this. You experience looking at it that people built this, that this was I know they built a bunch of them, but each one of them was a custom one-off because there's so many little differences between them. And you can see the workmanship and the craftsmanship and the wear and the tear, and it's really inspiring. But that's not the best thing I did that day.
What?
That's not the best thing I did that
day. What did you
do? Nice double take, Will. We also got an extensive tour of the VAB, or Vehicle Assembly Building.
Oh, you went in the big building?
I not only went in the big building, I went on the big building. We got a tour all the way up to and including the roof, where we got to see a 360 view of Canaveral and all of the launch pads.
I bet you can see Disney from there.
Dude, it was incredible. So just for scale, the VAB is a 550-foot tall building that's open on the inside, so you can assemble a full Saturn V rocket in there.
Vertically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. With
Wow.
They have four separate bays for assembling shuttles with like fold-down platforms that have cutouts that match whatever ship they're working on. I stood over a tiny hole over the tippy top of which would have poked the top of a Saturn rocket.
Wow. So I have to imagine, in scale from fiction, you're talking about a room like as big as the Jaeger room in Pacific Rim, right? It's an enormous, enormous room.
It's very difficult. I took tons of photos, and yet none of them quite communicate what I would refer to. Well, I first experienced this feeling when I went to Hangar 2, one of the large wooden blimp hangars at NASA Ames. And you can see the big steel one up close to the highway, but farther back behind it are the two hangars 1 and 2 made of redwood. They are 1,200 feet long, and it's 230 feet from the middle of the hangar to the truss work. And if you... We filmed in there on MythBusters several times, and if you're walking down the hangar and looking up, you actually get what I call reverse vertigo. Your body can't quite comprehend the scale of what you're inside, and the VAB is completely the same experience. It is so big, it has structure just because it has – it actually ends up not with weather inside, like you don't get actual clouds, but you do – they said if you open one of these doors – and again, these doors are 500 feet tall. If they open one of the doors, fog can roll through the building, and clouds – clouds have entered – at the top of the building.
I got to go there when I was in college, I guess. And when the guy, the person who was giving us the tour was like, hey, I want you to tilt your head back as far as it goes and look straight up at the ceiling. And then he stood behind us. So when we started to fall over, cause you kind of lost your sense of scale. He was there to put a hand on your shoulder. So you didn't tip. And like, it was, I don't get vertigo, but you kind of have this reverse vertigo. At least I did. It was unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, and so they when they first built the building, it had a concrete ceiling, and they had some difficulties with the expansion and contraction of the steel reinforcement caused some pieces to start to fall.
Oh my God.
They built a secondary ceiling to capture that stuff and to repair the roof, and they did. But up in there, because they built that second ceiling, it means you can actually go up in between the roof, and you can see the final beam that was laid to build the VAB and all the signatures of the people who have worked at NASA over the years.
Oh, that's so cool.
I have photos of all of this. Norm, I'm going to send you this so we can post it up on Tested. The scale, the sheer scale of not only the building, but then when you stand on the building, and we stood on the scaffolding on top of the building and look at where the Mercury and where the Apollo, where the astronauts. There was a launch that night that we unfortunately
There was a Delta and there was a SpaceX last week, both Delta.
It was 4. A Delta, and it was unfortunately like 30 minutes later than it should have been, which meant that when it was supposed to go was 15 minutes before Brain Candy went on stage. And so 15 minutes before, my entire crew was on the roof of our theater. Because we would have been able to see it from Melbourne, Florida.
Yeah. Is that a public tour, or did you guys get special access?
It was very special access. Yeah. In fact, it was a very apparently a very rare treat.
Scale is absolutely one of those things where it's so tough to experience that, even if you have a 360 panorama.
Yeah, nothing captures it.
And on the flip side, like you're talking about big scale, but same with small scale. When I got back, there's a new VR experience that NASA worked with to create called Mission ISS. It's a recreation of the International Space Station that you can actually fly through in VR. And I tried it, and it's convinced me how small those rooms are.
Oh, wow.
Because you see a lot of the photos.
Like, you and I went in the scale model when we were at Johnson.
And it feels even smaller.
And it feels smaller than that. Yeah.
Because you see photos that, you know, like, at Chris Hadfield and other astronauts take, you know, the exercise bikes at the cupola or the glove box room.
And the little sleeping nooks.
Right. All of that is actually much, much closer than I had comprehended in my head. It's very, very claustrophobic up there.
Well, so when we were in the scale model, I didn't feel like it was claustrophobic. Part of that is because not all of the modules have actually connected to the other modules. Sometimes you go outside into the big room. I felt like that VR thing felt a lot smaller than what we saw even. It's really neat. It's totally worth checking out. I think it's free on the Oculus Store.
Yeah. I'll share it with you when you get back to the shop, Adam.
I can't. I just wrote it down. It's on my list. I'm dying to try that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, you know, all of this talk of interesting places, I use Atlas Obscura when we're on the train to find places, but what is Atlas Obscura for, like, science and
it's making. Atlas Obscura.
Is it also Atlas Obscura?
Yeah. No, they covered that as well. In fact, Michael Stevens is also a fan of Atlas Obscura. And a couple of different times we've arrived in the city, and I would say, you know, they've got a blah, blah, blah here. And he goes, yeah, I looked it up this morning.
I spending time on Atlas Obscura has let me know that I'm really excited about tunnels. I didn't realize it, but like the article about the old Texas Super Collider, the tunnels there is really good. The one about the tunnels that go under the Capitol building, which are, you know, the staff House and Senate staff used to get around. Also really interesting. Tunnels are always good, it turns out.
That's really, I want to just give a shout out. This is going up on Tuesday, right?
Yes.
That's correct. So tonight, Brain Candy is in Birmingham, Alabama, and we have tickets left for this show. If you want to come out and see us, please come out. The show's been going stunningly well. The audiences are incredible. Michael and I are having a really fun time, and it's just delightful. The meet and greets afterwards with the kids and the families and new engineers. That's a lot of new engineers. It's really thrilling.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think
this is a good place to stand. Yeah.
If
you're listening, you should check out Titanium Physicists. It was really cool. Or for Titanium Physics, rather. It was really cool. I enjoyed it and I learned a lot. And I think you probably would too if you're into that sort of thing.
Very cool. As Adam alluded to earlier, we have a new series where Adam's visiting different makerspaces around the country. This week we have a video of the Children's Museum from Pittsburgh. This is all brought to you in part by the Fab Foundation. So that's a great video series. You should check that out. And the test community, we have our newest project with Sean and Jeremy, where they're trying to recreate the perfect thermal detonator from Return of the Jedi, and Adam contributed to part of that as well. Cool. So you got to check that out.
And I forgot to say this last week, but the first episode of The Foo Show is out now on Steam. You can go download it and buy it. It's $5 if you want to get the whole season. It's $22.50, I think, right now. And I talked to Brendan Chung from Blendo Games about his game Quadrilateral Cowboy, which is a cyberspace hacking game, like a Gibsonian kind of cyberspace hacking game. He built it mostly by himself, brought in one person at the end. We talk a lot about how the game's made. And there's an extended bit about interactivity and toilets in video games and the history of that. So I highly encourage you to check it out on Steam. You can just search for The Foo Show.
Cool. Awesome. Awesome.
Well, Adam, enjoy your day off.
I will. I will. And I'll see you guys. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay.
All right.
Bye,
everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.